because we exist in every single country on earth, we create this network of people around the world that can do a lot of good. So our purpose becomes connecting people and improving lives.
We are Smart OSC. This is Commerce Talk, the podcast that keeps you one step ahead.
I am your host, Aziza O'Byrne, and today we are chatting all things leadership, logistics, innovation, and a lot more with the brilliant Herbert Vong Posanachai. Herbert is the Managing Director of DHL Express International Thailand. He is the head of Indochina. He is also a member of the DHL Express Asia Pacific Management Board. He is at the heart and at the very center of steering the strategic growth and managing the overall operations for DHL Express in these areas. So please join me in giving a very warm welcome to the brilliant Herbert. Herbert, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you very much, Aziza. It's my pleasure to be here.
Oh, well, it's our pleasure to have you here. Now, I'm wondering if we could start at the very beginning, if you don't mind, because I know I only touched the tip of the iceberg when it comes to your career. So I'm wondering, to just let our listeners get to know you that little bit better, would you mind taking us through your career journey from your beginnings at Microsoft to where you are today at DHL Express?
Before I joined DHL, I started at Microsoft in 1996. At that time, we just launched Windows 95, and we're about to launch Windows 98. So I was basically there in sales and marketing. I started at the tail end of 95, and I ended with launching Windows XP. That's how I marked my career, based on our products. So Office XP, Windows XP. And I was recruited by DHL. When I asked, why are you hiring me? I'm a computer guy, and you're a logistics company. And they said that our business is not rocket science. You're more rocket science than we are. So if you're capable of learning, you can learn. So I was intrigued by that remark. And they said, well, why don't you try it? And I made the jump, partly also because for family reasons, I just wanted to spend more time with the kids. And my firstborn was 2 years old then. And I have one coming. Actually, on the day I started the company, I started with DHL. My second son was 1 to 2 months from being born. So one son was born in Microsoft, the other son was born in DHL.
Wow, what a journey, what a time. And I absolutely love that. I want to hone in on that piece that you mentioned there about how when you were hired by DHL, you're like, well, why are you hiring me? You know, I don't have the exact experience. I'm a computer guy. And I think that stands the test of time today, because there's a whole lot of jobs out there that maybe people may not go for because they feel that their experience may not match the exact things that the company is saying that they need. Whereas with DHL, I feel like they were a bit ahead of their time and they were able to see talent, not just within the area that they operate, but maybe some of their traits, some of their core beliefs, operations, how they worked, that interconnectedness of any kind of experience and background. And to be able to zoom out and see what benefit that may have on the company in general, not just, well, you're a computer guy, you stick to computers. There's something more there in the talent that they saw in you. And I think that's something great, because they put a bet on you. And given the time that you've been with them, I'd say it was a very good bet that they made.
Because what happened was I joined in the year 2003. So 7 years in Microsoft. And I started in 2003. That's 20 years ago, right? So in those 20 years, I spent about 4 years in Thailand. So, and by 2008, I was asked to take on Singapore. So I became a managing director of DHL Express Singapore from 2008 to 2016. So I spent 8 years running our Singapore branch country office. And then an opportunity came up. The country manager of Hong Kong was promoted to become the CEO of Asia Pacific. So he asked whether I would take his job. So I went in and became managing director of DHL Express Hong Kong. And I was there for from 2016 to end of 2019. And then at the end of 2019, there was an opportunity to come back home. And again, because of family reasons, all my kids have graduated from high school. They're heading out to the wide world of university life. So I said, well, it's time for me to go home. And I came back to Bangkok in the beginning of 2020, right before COVID.
Yes, I really want to delve further into that time period, especially that COVID timing with logistics. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But something that I really would love to look at and talk to you about right now is that move, that shift from going from Microsoft to DHL. I'd love to know, is there something that you wish you knew earlier in your career, or maybe a piece of advice that still stands out to you from that time in your career?
One of the things that was really fortunate for me is that I was greeted by a veteran of DHL who happens to be working in Thailand at the time. He's a Kiwi, he's a New Zealander. And he told me, before I started the job, he said, "Herbert, I really wanted this job, but they gave it to you. But I would like to tell you one thing. If you really want to learn, don't sit at your desk. Go out with the couriers. Right? Every time you have a chance, just go out and do some deliveries with the couriers. You will learn 10 times more than sitting in the office." Right? So I've been doing that every quarter. So every 3 months, I'll go out on a courier ride with my couriers in every country that I'm in for the past 20 years.
You know what? That is so important because it goes for every single role.
Yeah.
That may not be just in the side of logistics and delivery. It's really about any organization that you get into, any business that you get into.
Yes.
Is really getting out there and understanding every nook and cranny.
I am forever grateful to my friend. We became really good friends and he taught me a lot. And I think what I learned from that is if you really want to learn, you have to be on ground in the field, working with the people, and they'll tell you stuff you'll never learn elsewhere.
You know, like I've heard of different organizations telling their employees to go down and speak to those who are at the front line of their business, those who are dealing directly with their customers, so that you can see from their point of view, put yourself in their shoes. I think that's really useful. It's just giving you that additional learning about your organization, no matter where you are in that organization. So thank you so much for sharing that. Another thing that I'd love to look at is, you know, I see that your role is very much focused on driving growth, innovation, and improving customer logistical experiences. And before we delve into those areas, are there any tools or resources that you find most helpful in achieving your goals?
Well, for me, because I'm a tech guy, I came from the tech industry, I find that we've always talked about how we can use technology better at workplace. So in the past 20 years, fortunately, the company has been very innovative and has allowed our technology to improve over time. And I find that the tools that are most important is the productivity platform that we create, both on the field where the guys can innovate and develop systems that is particular to the country that is needed. The flexibility of doing something that matches the need of the business, right? We used to call it, you know, application programming. Then we have different tech terms for it, but basically it's using technology to make your life easier. And recently, some of the big developments that we have is the implementation of a platform that allows us to do what today is called robotic process automation, RPA. So it allows our staff and people who are tech savvy to develop their own solutions to their daily problems. And now we have tools that are either zero coding or no coding, and they're able to develop their own automation on their systems. And I've seen great stuff that's happening around me in terms of managing less and less paper. I have almost no paper in my office, right? Except if I have a contract to sign, but otherwise there's no paper left. We use digitalization as a mantra to get us out of that, you know, paper trap and move to a more productive environment. I find that being from the tech industry, getting to see it for real happening in a company, for me is one of the more rewarding parts of the job.
That's such an exciting thing to see, especially integrating it from the ground up and having it as part of your everyday life. And it's almost reminding me of, you know, what you mentioned there about the courier and getting into the car with couriers. It's delving into those new areas or different aspects of the business from a technology point of view and being open to learning something new. And as you said, just making day-to-day life easier.
That's right.
Which is so great.
And it happens in countries, especially if you have the right team, the mixture of veterans who may be used to the way that they've done all this time and some new generation of people who said, "Oh, why don't we do it this way?" And then have them sit down and work together. to come up with the best solution that solves the issue at hand. We found that to be very productive and very effective in terms of increasing our people's productivity and customer satisfaction, because then customer gets a better service.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I think that's the most beautiful part of it all. It's this wonderful mixture of cross-disciplinary learning. We're at the center of it all, at the heart, throbbing heart of it is the customer. And it makes me think of, we spoke about this before, and it was in one of our previous episodes, we spoke to Ms. Su Thing Fu. She is the Global Head of Brand and Insights at HP. And in our chat and in our episode, we're talking about the power of purpose and the power of brands that have purpose and how important it is when truly trying to reach your customers. Now, when I look at DHL, I absolutely love the purpose that you have, which revolves around connecting people and improving lives. And I think that purpose can be seen so much in everything that you do, from your community initiatives, your volunteering efforts and more. Can you tell us a bit about how this overarching purpose influences and shapes the culture within DHL?
I think what we developed was trying to create a sense of purpose that allows our people to understand why we're here. You realize this is a logistics company, right? What we do has been around for centuries. We're probably one of the oldest professions on earth. Once we start farming, the next thing we need to do is we need to transport goods, right? So one of the things that we create, the purpose of DHL, because we exist in every single country on earth, there's barely any country, except if the country is at war, we are in the country operating. So what happens is we create this network of people around the world that can do a lot of good. So our purpose becomes connecting people and improving lives, because it transcends the day-to-day grind that we do. We try to do the best service possible in our day-to-day work, but the purpose of it is to connect people and improve their lives. And that created a lot of synergies within the company. So when I was in, say, Singapore or Hong Kong, where the community is much, much more developed or so industrialized, so to speak. So in that type of environment, there's a lot of elderly people. So the community needs help to take care of the elderly. And then we have activities and people go out on their own sometimes. They have on their own time, they will spend with the elderly. In a younger community or communities where it's thriving or developing, like Thailand, there's still so much you can do, because there's still a lot of poor people. There's a lot of people that needs better education. There are people that are not as fortunate as others. So we even have what we call in Thai, they call DHL Tambi, which is DHL Do Good. So every week, everyone will come up with their own weekly initiative. So today they'll just donate blood. Next week we'll go and visit an orphanage and let's repaint a room and build out a place for the kids to play in. Put in rubber mats so that they won't get themselves hurt in that room. Or next week, we'll go and treat lunch to another elderly home. There's so much you can do depending on where you are, right? It's unstoppable. We have so many things that we could do in every country. And then we created what's called a disaster recovery team, because globally, there's always a disaster happening. So globally, we created this community of volunteers. For example, when Nepal had an earthquake, or Thailand had the tsunami, or Indonesia. So what we did was, usually what happens is people send aid, and the aid comes in the form of aircraft. You land in an airport, and then you take out all your aid, and then somebody has to distribute it. So guess what? The airport becomes like a warehouse. There's nobody to manage it. Our disaster recovery team works with the United Nations to be the crack team for managing airports. So what we do is we fly into Nepal, bring in forklifts. Actually, over there, they didn't have enough forklifts, so we brought our own. We put our people in, stay there for a month, right? And we take care of cleaning out stuff, make sure that the runway is good for people to land, and put them in warehouses, categorize them, and send them out as needed as transportation comes out to pick them up. So a lot of work has been done in this for years. We've done this over the years. I think our team is currently in Turkey. There's a lot of things going on in Turkey that we need to work on. It's something that is very fulfilling for our people. They're very passionate about it. they spend their own time sitting and sleeping at the airport to take care of these goods so that we can manage the disasters better.
It's honestly so incredible. And there's something so powerful in that drive that will get you up in the morning because you know why.
Absolutely correct.
And you mentioned that why.
You hit the nail on the head. To me, it's about getting up in the morning and said, oh, I want to go to work because there's a lot to do. And there's a lot of stuff that means something.
Could be something that is missing in general, maybe even in life as well. It's that knowing that why, that purpose, and being a joint piece of that purpose and having that advocation for good and feeling like you are really a part of it.
That's right.
I just think it's so important and it is so brilliant to see.
I'd like to add one more thing because this went all the way up to our global management board. And what they did is they created this global event called DHL's Got Heart. So we asked all the things that we do in the community and the personal sponsorship that our people take in different countries to bring them together, right? And we can share our thoughts on what we've done. We have a lady in Vietnam who works for us who spends her weekends teaching children outside of the city so that they can learn English. We have people in Europe who spend their free time taking care of the terminally ill so they can pass in their homes, bring in medical equipment as needed so that they can pass surrounded by their family and loved ones. We have people who work with kids that are needy, providing them with sports and bicycle in low-income communities in South Asia so that they will have something to do instead of going around creating trouble. We have a lot of these people who then get sponsored by the company and the company spends tens of thousands of euros to each of these good causes so that they can establish a sustainable organization that runs the charity of their liking.
It's that sustainability, I think. It's the sustainability. I love that you mentioned that because it is so important. And we'll touch on that more in a little bit. But you know what I loved when we started this conversation, just before we started to record, I mentioned that I loved you were wearing your branded DHL jacket and you popped up the branded DHL water bottle. And things like that, when a brand has meaning and purpose, it means so much more. It's not just a branded item. It's actually just a badge of honor.
Yes.
Which is just so important.
Yeah.
Now, touching on the sustainability side, I noticed recently that you've merged innovation, customer experience, and logistics together with your move towards green logistics and the launch of the electric fleets in Thailand. Now, a quote of yours that I really liked in regards to this activity was, sustainability is not just a trend, but a mission. Can you speak more about this and can you share a bit more about what we can expect to come from DHL Express in the future while you are on this mission?
Well, one of the things that we realized quite quickly is that because we're a transportation company, especially DHL Express is an air express company. We use a lot of airplanes. We have our own fleet of aircrafts. So we do generate a significant part of carbon footprint on this planet. And one of the things that our shareholders are very supportive and our global management supports globally is that we need to spend some extra money to make sure we reduce our carbon footprint. And we want to be net zero by 2050. And to get there, we have a medium-term goal in 2030 to get at least 60% of our last mile to be electrified, which means EV, right? And we also want 60% of our aircraft fleet to then be running on sustainable aviation fuel. They are used cooking oils. So it's called sustainable aviation fuel or SAF. SAF is more expensive than normal fuel because you have to reprocess something. And these can be mixed with normal aviation fuel and reduce carbon footprint by up to 80%. So what you do is we have to fix the ground. We have to fix the aircraft, and then we have to fix our buildings. So today, all of our buildings in Thailand that operates as our service centers, where all our vans go into, they all run on solar cells. So we now on solar. And our goal is, because we want to move, we know where we have to go in 2050. We have to make sure that the journey takes place now. And that's why we launched EV as soon as it becomes available in any country. So for us, for Thailand, we just got our first fleet, the first 16 earlier this year, and we're rolling out as we go. You know, as we are retiring the old trucks, the old vans, we're bringing in EVs.
It's really nice to see that joint up goal and that joint up vision, because sometimes those things can be very fleeting for businesses, and it's just something to put down and say that you're doing. Whereas, you know, as you say, you're putting down these dates, but you're starting now. There's wider goals happening, but this action starts now. And, you know, you're not just twiddling your thumbs and waiting around for that date to come. Everything has to happen now, and you're building up towards it. You're building your momentum and doing what you can at this moment in time. Now, one of our previous guests spoke about cross-border commerce as a potential trend for the future. One thing that I love to ask our guests, you know, and I'll ask you this in a little while, is their thoughts on emerging trends that are coming down the line. Now, she discussed how businesses focus on selling within their own countries and borders, but there's really great opportunities out there to innovate and bring the world together through commerce. Now, when I look at DHL, I think you are already at the forefront of this emerging opportunity, and you spent a lot of time in this space. So could you share any thoughts on cross-border sales or offer any advice for those wanting to enter the market?
Well, I have many success stories over my career where I've seen brands create this amazing brand that became global, and they started small, right? That when I was in Hong Kong, there's a little brand that makes phone cases, and they're supposed to be very protective cases. The guy is a young man, very eloquent, very energetic, and he was passionate about building his brand. He built a phone case that cost $99. And we were going, why would you build, who would buy a phone case that costs $99, right? But he said, it's all right, this is what I am. And we did a collaboration with them. So eventually we have a co-branded line. We did for a while, but they also collab with everyone. They created this giant global brand. You can see them in Instagram nowadays, people holding on. They have little black ring around the camera of all types of phones. And the brand is called Casetify, right? This young man, he leveraged us because he's a guy in Hong Kong and he wants to build a global brand, a global business, and he needs to reach everyone. So people can order online, right? And they can choose how they want their phones. If you go slow, you go by normal snail mail, it will take whatever. Guess what? If you're buying something at 99, you want it tomorrow, yesterday, actually. So we became a natural partner because he can reach the people in the United States just as if he's in the United States. He can reach Europe, you know, as well as him setting up a branch in Europe. As long as he's on their Instagram or on their Facebook or on their social media, they can order. And that became an amazing engine that I've seen. Now, in Thailand, we even had, talking about sustainability, we have a product that allows the customer to put and claim our transportation. Since we use electric vehicles and sustainable aviation fuel, SAF, you can book and claim the carbon footprint that we save onto your books for people who have Go Green targets. Because you're transporting something, you're generating carbon. So the way the global Go Green taxonomy is counted, you can count how much you save on your distribution. So we can pass on our carbon footprint back to the customer. So there's this brand in Phuket. They make coral safe suntan lotion for people who go diving, and it's called Alive to Dive, the brand. And because their goods are nature friendly, they're trying to build a brand that is organic and people can go diving without worrying about the chemicals on their body would spoil the corals. So they don't want to emit carbon. So they're one of the first people who said, I want to go with your Go Green Plus. It's called Go Green Plus product, because that allows us to give them a certificate which says you've just saved how many tons of carbon, right? And that was amazing, because I thought only big companies, our largest customers, would actually do that accounting of counting their carbon footprint. But I find that young people, new brands, startups that are really passionate about what they're doing also do not want to pollute. So they signed on, and they're very happy to pay a little bit more, but that's because they want to do good to the planet. It's amazing.
There's so much in this, because even as you mentioned that and the collaboration with you, you know, from DHL's perspective and these small brands, we spoke about in one of our episodes, cybersecurity, and how, you know, know, customers these days, they just do not have any hesitation to stop using a brand if they feel like their data isn't safe. And, you know, the person that we interviewed spoke about how you are just as much responsible for your own brand as you are with those brands that you partner with. So when I think about those smaller brands, it's so important to be able to have that ability to latch onto DHL in that way, to have that badge of honor and show their customers that they are actually, you know, posting out their goods and services in the most sustainable way possible. And I think it touches on that customer need, because at the heart of all of that is the customer and, you know, their relationship with the brand, their needs for wanting to be more sustainable as well as a nation or as a person individually. And that brings us to, I think, our next question, which is around connecting with people. And I'd love to just ask you, and I think you might touch on that as well in your last answer, you know, the observation since the COVID-19 pandemic, when you moved just before the pandemic, are there any observations that you've seen with customers and their needs and maybe how businesses can best help serve those needs?
One of the things that changed immediately during the pandemic is that people moved from their offices to their homes. So imagine our couriers who never stopped working. Our couriers are always had worked through the pandemic. Is that we have to relearn how to make deliveries because people are no longer open from 9 to 5. They're sitting at home. So instead of delivering to the offices, the same packages are being delivered to different people's homes. So the number of deliveries multiplied. So instead of doing, couriers measure themselves on stops, right? They can do maximum 30, 40 stops. Now they cannot do 30, 40 stops because 5 packages now goes to 5 homes. So instead of 1 stop, it becomes 5 stops. So the number of stops that they have to do per day multiplied. So we have to add in more and more couriers to deal with the fact that we have a lot more stops to do for every package. We have to relearn where everybody live because we traditionally deliver during the day and people are at work. So we're used to delivering at the offices. Now we go to almost exclusively residential deliveries, which is always part of the business, but never the majority. So during the 3 years, there's a heck of a lot to learn. The whole company had to go through, basically, we have to be on steroids for 3 years, right? And our planes and everything, we had to step up to the plate and deliver the services that is needed. And that's just to keep the economy running because, you know, people are in trouble and they needed help. But one of the proudest thing that we've done in many countries is for us to deliver some of the first vaccines into the different countries. Because once, for example, when mRNA vaccines become available, many countries need it. And you need to store it at minus 70 degrees Celsius. And it has to be in a special packaging with, there's an accelerometer inside. It tracks with the movement of the goods. It tracks the temperature and it reports back to the pharmaceutical company. So they work with us to make sure that the packages are transported safely. It doesn't get tilted too much because, you know, you don't want to spill stuff. It doesn't get too warm. If the temperature jumps, they'll tell us. If there's a leak, we have to fix the leak. We have to put in more dry ice if needed. So all this replenishment and supply chain is extremely sophisticated. We set it up in Europe and US, we picked it up and then we sent it all over the world. And I did that for Bangkok too. I was there at the Suvarnabhumi Airport at 4 a.m. in the morning waiting for our plane to come in to deliver our first mRNA vaccine. And the deputy prime minister was there. The U.S. Embassy was there and, you know, it was a proud moment for all our staff because this is their families. These are their communities and it's a life-saving vaccine. And for us, I think that was the highlight of that period.
It goes back to that purpose, doesn't it? Like, why am I here in the airport at 4 a.m.? Well, it's the purpose of this brand. I'm here to help improve lives. We're here to help improve lives. And it sounds like, you know, with you and your team, it's this really exciting hub of consistently learning, growing, building, testing, trialing, which sounds incredible, but I'd say it needs a lot of coffee. I'd say you need a lot of coffee to get through all of this.
One thing you cannot complain about this company is that although I say it's a daily grind, every day is different. Every day there's something else going on that we need to fix. So because there's so many moving parts, one of our legends, right, told me that supply chain, DHL Express supply chain looks like a chain, little chains that are strung together in a very complex way. The action is very simple, but they're put together in a very complex way. And if one of them breaks, you have a problem. You need to fix them right away. And that's very true.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, looking ahead now, you know, at that chain or maybe the technological advancements that may change or shape the logistics industry, are there any trends, emerging trends that you're keeping a close eye on that may be worth noting for those in e-commerce or logistics?
There are many things that will affect the way in which we trade, right? We believe in free trade. However, with the current geopolitical environment, we see that there's a shift happening around the world in terms of where we source material, where we produce material, where we assemble products. As this change, the global supply chain will shift and change. And so this, it will be gradual and it will be sudden, because gradual because people have to build out stuff. But once it starts, you know, the momentum will build and it will become very quick in terms of sourcing out. Where do you source your raw materials? Where do you assemble them? Where do you fabricate them? And where do you assemble them and distribute? This creates a whole change in the way in which companies like us do the last mile. We do the final distribution, those products, and we do the transport of those raw materials. As they ship, we have to ship with them. The technology that will help this, there are many. One of them, you know, we've been working on what is now called AI. AI has been around a long time. I studied AI in school, right? So I'm a computer scientist by training. So we studied neural networks since that was in the 1990s. But today we've used machine learning for a long time to create machine learnable data information that allows us to make decisions in terms of how do we build our routes so that our couriers can have the most efficient route that they run, and they know which should be their first stop, which should be their last stop. How do they create the most efficient and most effective way of providing the best service? And also our call center moved towards, you know, the large call centers that we have around the world. We speak the local language. Every country has its own call center because we believe in our local people talking to local customers. So we are now seeing a shift from phones, talking on the phone, to chat and emails. In the old days, we even used telex. I think it was before you were born. Telexes used to be fax machines. Then we moved to fax. Now we're in the age where it's chat and email. Now, a lot of AI, especially in large language models, can help create an environment where customers can interact with large language models to give very quick answers to some of the frequently asked questions. So AI will aid in that respect with natural language responses to customers. Then when it gets a bit more complicated or customized, that is beyond what the chat engine can do, it will pass on to a human being and then we can chat. So we're now creating call centers that are both online and on the phone. That's normal now, right, in most countries. And that team, I think over time, it will shift more and more towards online, because now, you know, moms trying to call their kids, they don't yell anymore. They send a message, then the kids come down to eat, right? They don't respond if you yell at them, but they're responding if you chat at them. So that's where we're going.
It's so true. You're almost too scared to go downstairs. But I really like that hybrid outlook as well. And the, you know, the comfort of speaking to a human, but also the comfort of knowing that there's not going to be any chinks in the chain either. That, you know, everything's going to smoothly operate. And there's a reason as to why everything is happening along that chain, which is really interesting for the future. Now, I have a final question, but this wasn't part of my questions, but I'd love to ask you this, if that's okay, in terms of, what do you think is the difference between a good leader and a great leader?
I usually think about this in different ways. I have many people that I admire that are role models, and there are different types of leaders that I know I'm not. There are many types of other leaders that I know I can emulate or I can learn from. But to me, a great leader is somebody who will support the team and empower the team to do great work, right? Without going up in front of them, giving them the credit that they need and they deserve. And he or she will only show up when things go sideways and they take responsibility and go out there and help support the team. You should show up only when you're needed and let the team do the good stuff, right? And make sure that they take credit for it, because I'm at the age where I'm thinking about the next stage of my life, which is retirement, right? And I want the next generation to be empowered and be able to inspire others. And then they will become the next generation of leaders in the company. So for me, I now have the luxury of thinking about, okay, what kind of legacy do I want to leave? I think a great leader leaves that legacy where people remember them that, oh, this is the person that made me who I am, you know, 5-10 years later.
That's wonderful. I love that, because it's that foresight of knowing I won't be in this position forever. So we need to allow people to have that ability to step up and really feel powerful in themselves as they take the next steps and really feel like they're supported. You know, it's like walking on a tightrope. Now, final question. What would be the best piece of advice that you could give to somebody in a leadership position?
Well, the best advice that I could give is the most difficult thing for a person, a leader to do, is to build a great team. And in my life, because I traveled and I get stationed in different countries, you also inherit a team, right? It's like poker. You get dealt a pack of cards, and those cards are what you have, and you have to make something great out of it. So if you're a card player, you know that you probably have to make sure that the mix of this becomes something better than the individual cards. It's like a team. So if you want to create that team, it's a lot of hard work. It takes time, right? Sometimes you benefit from the work of your predecessor who has built a great team. Sometimes you have to make changes to the team. It depends on what you're dealt, the cards that is in your hand. But either way, it's a lot of hard work to build and sustain that team, because that team will be, you want them to become the A team. Everybody wants to build an A team, but it's much harder than you think.
That's brilliant. I love it. And I think that's such a wonderful way to end things here. Herbert, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time to be with us today. And I know a lot of people are going to get so much value from your insights and from everything we discussed today. So thank you so much for joining us.
Fine. Thank you for having me.